Welcome to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. What an amazing week this has been. We're going to be talking about state and local politics, national politics, and whatever you want to talk about. If you join us in the conversation at 303-696-1971, I'm joined in studio by State Senator Greg Brophy and by my friend Rich Sokol, who is, among other things, on the board of the Colorado Republican Business Coalition. It's been a fascinating week. I want to do just a little bit of news of the week before we jump into all the politics. One story that we are going to talk about a lot more later, but want to mention now, is that Nancy Pelosi announced on Friday that she will run to be House Minority Leader, something that I imagine almost all Republicans cheered about when she announced. We're going to talk about that a lot more later. Perhaps one of the most interesting election outcomes, which I doubt many of you have heard about, in San Francisco, and it actually happened to be on Election Day, even though it wasn't actually an election, but on Election Day in San Francisco, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted to ban Happy Meals in McDonald's restaurants. In particular, they banned the ability of restaurants to include toys in meals that have a certain that exceed a certain number of calories, if some percent more than some percentage of calories come from fat. It's the nanny state at its absolute worst, but that's San Francisco for you. And of course, San Franciscans do very strange things, like elect Nancy Pelosi. And we will be speaking later in the show with John Dennis, who ran as a Republican, the Republican candidate against Nancy Pelosi. We're going to have a fascinating conversation with Mr. Dennis, who I would describe probably more as a libertarian than your typical Republican, but a very interesting guy, and that'll be a great conversation. Now, one other point I want to make, when you think about the results in elections around the country, yes, Republicans picked up a lot of seats in the House of Representatives, but as we sit here in Colorado, I think many Colorado conservatives would consider this election to be a modest failure for the state of Colorado, and a lot of that comes down to messaging by the parties, who's got more money to spend, who's good at get out the vote, and all this kind of tactical stuff. But there's also a lot to be said for the fact that a lot of stupid people vote. What really drove that home to me was the results in South Carolina. In South Carolina, many of you might have heard the story about this guy, Alvin Green, who got the Democratic nomination to run for Senate in South Carolina. He is an unemployed Army veteran. Well, we think he's an Army. He claims to be an Army veteran. And he got in trouble for, I think he got arrested for showing porn to an underage girl or something like that. And nobody actually knows how this guy even got the nomination, really, in South Carolina to run against Jim DeMint. Nobody was going to beat Jim DeMint. In any case, this guy, Alvin Green, won 28% of the vote in South Carolina and carried 10 counties, 10 of the state's 46 counties. When someone like that, unemployed, porn displayer, gets 28% of the vote, it tells you a lot about the electorate. And I'm not going to it'd be probably pretty easy to pick on South Carolina, but I'm not going to actually just pick on South Carolina. I think this says a lot about the electorate in America. And to be frank, especially on the Democrat side of things, I think there are a lot of incredibly uninformed people. And that's how we end up with some of the results that we end up with. Interesting news story this week. Many of you probably already heard about the bombs that were caught and did not go off on UPS cargo planes. These were very, very sophisticated bombs, apparently created in Yemen, that traveled for some time, at least on passenger aircraft as freight, before they were put on cargo planes. And what's sort of interesting to me about this is that this headline in the Washington Times from today: the Saudis warned the U.S. of the package bomb plot weeks ago. So it is interesting. We do have this sort of worldwide intelligence sharing network that does appear to be doing a few good things. There was a UPS plane crash in Dubai in September, which was called an accident at the time, but Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is claiming that they were responsible for that. We'll see. In the meantime, this American-born Yemeni dual citizen whose name escapes me, Al-Maliki, something like that, who's the imam who's hanging out in Yemen. The U.S. government has put out a wanted dead or alive on him, and there's been some controversy about whether it's okay for America to try to kill an American citizen overseas without a trial. I say bring me his head on a pike. And then one thing that I feel a need to do here, because it's so rare. President Barack Obama is, in my mind, clearly the worst president of my lifetime. He's worse than Jimmy Carter. And different than Jimmy Carter in the sense that Jimmy Carter was a bumbling oaf peanut farmer, whereas Barack Obama is fairly intelligent and actually, in my view, different from Jimmy Carter, dislikes America, in my view. And so I find lots of reasons to criticize Barack Obama, but I want to give him credit for something. And I'm actually not being sarcastic here, even though I often am when I credit Obama with good things. But in Obama's trip to India, which is, you know, another story in itself, but in India, Barack Obama is talking about free trade as beneficial to America. And he is talking about India as not just this home for outsourced jobs, but rather that trade deals, many of which were completed before Barack Obama got there, but now he gets to announce them. He's promoting $10 billion in trade deals like that, that the White House says will create about 54,000 jobs at home. And I, you know, estimating a number of jobs to be created from trade deals is sort of silly, just like when the Obama administration, you know, estimated how many jobs would be created or saved by the stimulus. But still, the fact that Barack Obama is out there talking about free trade, which is something that a lot of his union base is very much against, is a very good thing. It's the first important thing that I think Barack Obama has gotten right, at least in a very long time. So I applaud Barack Obama's talking about the value of free trade to America. It is a very important thing. So with that, guys, we've got a couple minutes before we get to our next segment. I should mention we expect at 5:30 we expect to be joined by Walker Stapleton, who narrowly won election to become the next treasurer of the state of Colorado, beating Kerry Kennedy, who some people believed was being groomed to be a governor or other things. Greg, you're nodding your head. What's your take on that?
I think it was a big deal that Walker beat Kerry Kennedy when he did, because I think you're right. I think it was clear that the treasurer's office has traditionally been used as a launching pad for runs at the governor's office in Colorado. Roy Romer, Bill Owens, and Mike Kaufman all launched out of the treasurer's office for further statewide races. And I think it was obvious then that, you know, as a darling of the teachers union, the architect of Amendment 23, and also one of the architects of the what they call the mill levy freeze, the property tax increase that they passed in 2008, she was clearly in that position for potential races in the future.
Rich, you know, you and I were standing. I think you and I were standing next to each other at the Republican election headquarters when Stapleton found out that he had won. Was I standing next to you and he sort of jumped up and cheered and
That's
high
right.
fives all around? How'd you feel then? We've got about a minute in this break. I mean, how did that feel to you? I mean, it's been so long since I've stood around any Republican who won anything except for when you won your race for the South Metro Fire Rescue Board. But how was that moment?
I think it was a great moment. Unfortunately, it was one of the few great moments that night. We were obviously hoping better for Buck, but I think Walker's going to do a great job. He's got a great mind for business. He's a fiscal conservative, and as he said, he's never spent a day in his life in government, and Kerry Kennedy had never spent a day outside of government. And I think bringing that private business experience to the state treasurer's office is going to be a great boon for Colorado taxpayers.
I hope so. I think so. And it's only fitting, you know, to me it seemed that the only reason Kerry Kennedy won, if you recall, she beat Mark Hillman, who I thought was and is one of the best candidates for anything in the state of Colorado, and he's a personal friend of mine. So when she won, you know, she got caught up in this pro-Democrat or rather anti-Republican wave, and now And now she got it right back in her face, which is absolutely fine with me. She is, as you said, a darling of the unions, and glad she will be gone. When we come back after this break, we're going to start talking a lot more in depth about Colorado politics. We'll speak with Senator Brophy about the results of the election for the state Senate. Stay with us right here on Backbone Radio.
We now return to Backbone Radio.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way.
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, joined in studio by State Senator Greg Brophy and Rich Sokol. Behind the glass, Joshua Scharf. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 303-696-1971. You can shoot me an email, rossputin, R-O-S-S-P-U-T-I-N, at rossputin.com, or send me an instant message. Rossputin is my screen name over at the AOL Instant Messenger, or from my website at rossputin.com. There's a little box where you can send me an instant message. I wanted to mention, if you are a diehard political junkie, like probably all of us in this room, looking for more election follow-up and conversation, I and Ryan Call will be guests and speaking a bit over at the Liberty on the Rocks, Red Rocks chapter at Old Chicago, 145 Union Boulevard in Lakewood, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, November 15th. So if you can join us, that would be great. Old Chicago in Lakewood, Monday the 15th. Let's jump into conversation about the state legislature, as long as we've got Greg Brophy here. And let's start with what you know best. Let's talk about the state Senate. First question is, how many seats did Republicans pick up in the state Senate, and how many are still undecided?
Well, we needed four to win, and we only, unfortunately, picked up one. Ellen Roberts won on the Western Slope fairly handily. We have a seat in Colorado Springs where there are still a handful of ballots, about 79 or 80, that need to be cured. Those are absentee ballots where the signature wasn't right or wasn't signed or whatever, and you can go chase those down and try to find out if that was actually filled out by the appropriate person, and then that ballot can actually be counted. And then there are something like 1,200 provisional ballots that still could be counted in that race, and if they were all counted and they were Republicans for whatever reason didn't get their absentee in the mail right, and they were waiting on something like that happened, then it's conceivable that Owen could win, but I certainly wouldn't want to bet much money on that one. We lost a close race in Senate District 20, I think, where you live, Ross.
And, I live in 16.
I mean, 16. Yeah. In Senate District 16, we lost a close race by about 500 votes, give or take. And there's still some provisionals that need to be counted there, but it's pretty hard to overcome a 500 vote deficit in some area like that. We lost, like I said, Senate District 5 in the mountains by another 500 votes. So there's about 1,500 votes that really, across three districts in total, that separate control for versus non-control of the Colorado State Senate. That's mostly a result of a whole combination of things. 500 votes one way or the other, more money spent on the other side in some of those races. In some races, that's slightly better gerrymandering from the reapportionment commission when they set up those seats. As we were talking off air, the Colorado Springs seat, it just is drawn across the heart of the city, including Manitou Springs, and laying underneath it were the only two House seats that were controlled by Democrats. Also in Colorado Springs, we got one of those back in our effort to win back the Colorado House. So, and it was close. It's just close all the way around in these races. I think the top of the ballot probably bled down and cost some support amongst unaffiliated voters for some of these state House and state Senate seats.
So the state House, it appears that Republicans have gotten control back.
Yes, they have. They needed six seats, and they have won six seats. There are several seats in the North Metro area, up Adams County and Jefferson County areas up there that were settled by 200 votes or 300 votes either way. We picked up two of those as wins with Robert Ramirez and I think Don Beasley is the other guy's name. Beasley's is Broomfield, Ramirez is Westminster and Adams County seat. Both of those guys won by 300 and 200 votes respectively, and they're both going to hold those victories. The Republican, or, you know, Republicans are out trying to cure ballots at the same rate that the Democrats are out trying to cure ballots, those ballots that don't have the proper signatures on them. So we'll hold those, and we'll end up winning back the Colorado House. Frank McNulty will be the Speaker of the Colorado House, and they'll control all of the committees. And it will result in a little more fair give and take between the ideological spectrums that exist in the Colorado legislature. There's one other exciting seat, House District 61 in the western side of the mountains of Colorado, where Kathleen Curry was running a write-in race against Luke Korkowski, the Republican, and Roger Wilson, the Democrat. Well, right now, Wilson is ahead by about 500 votes. But just Friday night, a Denver district judge ruled that the county clerks in that area had to go back and inspect the ballots where there was an undervote on them. So there's about 1,200 of those ballots where people voted, but they didn't mark one of the bubbles for House District 61. And if her name was written in on the line, Kathleen Curry's name was written out on the line, but they failed to mark the appropriate spot on the ballot, fill in the bubble, the judge told them they have to count that. And so there's an effort forward, you know, going forward over there to try to get those ballots counted for her. The Republican is far enough behind that he can't possibly make up any ground. It's possible, not likely, but possible that Kathleen would win a write-in race over there.
Would you prefer to see her than the Democrat?
Absolutely. Yeah, I work. She's actually like a 60% Republican running as an unaffiliated. She's fiscally fairly conservative, really good on Second Amendment issues, and a close ally of mine on water issues and ag issues as a rural person. She's socially liberal, served as a Democrat for 5 years and then flipped to unaffiliated for her sixth year in the legislature. Probably votes with the Republicans 60% of the time.
Rich, let me turn to you for a second in terms of what's your prognostication as someone who watches politics a lot on how our upcoming governor, currently mayor of where you live, John Hickenlooper, what's your guess as to how he will behave when he's in office? Do you think he will be a sort of moderate pragmatist as he likes to portray himself, or do you think he'll be Colorado's own Barack Obama?
You know, I think it's a very tough call at this point, Ross, because, you know, we all heard him repeatedly get on the stump and say, when he was with Mays and Tancredo, and say, well, I'm just as fiscally disciplined as those guys are, but I'm just more socially liberal. So if you want a fiscal discipline guy, that's me. Well, we'll have to say, you know, the proof is in the pudding. He's never held statewide office before. I don't really think there's enough in his record at Denver that we can go by to get a good sense of how he'll rule. He is closely aligned with some business interests, however. Business generally came and supported Hickenlooper. So hopefully that influence will be a good influence on him and keep him from going too far left. But, you know, there's a lot of people that got surprised by Barack Obama, and hopefully we're not going to be surprised by John Hickenlooper.
Well, there were a lot of rumors around there, and rumors that I believe that early on in the governor's race, some so-called moderate Republicans, some big money moderate Republicans, supported Hickenlooper before Tancredo got in the race, when it just looked like Mays versus Hickenlooper. A lot of these guys jumped over to Hickenlooper, so I hope that just the fact that they did that will allow them to have some kind of moderating influence on him. I don't trust him, but I also don't mistrust him initially to the degree that I mistrusted Barack Obama from day one.
Yeah, I think you have to say, you know, obviously, you know, just so you know, personally, I voted for Tancredo, but if you had to have a Democrat win, I think as a Republican, Hickenlooper would be the Democrat you'd want to win. At least on the surface, he talks the right game.
Greg, one word answer. Agree or disagree with what Rich just said? If you're going to have a Dem, Hickenlooper's not too bad.
Agreed.
So when we come back after this break, I hope that we will be joined by Treasurer-elect Walker Stapleton. I know he is traveling, so it's not certain we will get him, but we're gonna do our best. So stay with us right here on Backbone Radio on News Talk 710 KNUS and 1460 KZNT.